back. You're listening to Todd Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB 1310. Great song choice, Sully.
Thank you.
Here Comes the Sun. That's in honor of our guest, Mr. Sunshine himself, Todd Guttner, meteorologist, Channel 6. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks. It's great to be here. I was actually somewhat hoping for Cold November Rain by Guns N' Roses. But
that's what I wanted. I asked Sully, can we do a mix-up? Can we do
something? Like a little montage or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would
be
cool.
And she was like, no, she wanted to keep it pure Beatles. And, she runs the board.
Well, I'm a big Beatles fan, too. I mean, I remember my folks using, you know, the records, the old school records, and listening to that when I was probably 6 years old.
You're saying that, and I'm sitting across from you, I know you've been in the business for a long time, but you appear to be so youthful that when you say your folks, you kind of looked at me like I was another old guy.
Oh, come on.
I know you did, but a young guy like you, you may not be able to relate to Eagles, Fleetwood Mac. I've got some Clapton, right? Hey, I want to talk about, obviously, you've had a great career here in Portland. From 2000, 2007, you were in Portland. Then you got called up to the big league, so to speak, another NBC affiliate, WBZ, down in Boston. And then you came home. You came home recently last year to come back on WCSH6, the NBC affiliate here in Portland. But before we talk about all that, talk a little bit about where you grew up, and then we'll talk about how you first became interested in either weather, climate, being a meteorologist. And then there's going to be like a bonus round where I want you to explain Doppler radar to me. I want to see if you can calibrate Fahrenheit to Celsius. All those trick questions. But why don't we start with like the early years of Todd Guttner?
Let's see. I grew up in Connecticut, town of West Hartford, Connecticut. Went to Conard High School. That's kind of where I got the itch to be a meteorologist. In 1985, Hurricane Gloria, which made landfall in Connecticut and kind of cut right up through Hartford and then Mass, and eventually actually impacted Maine quite a bit with a number of power outages and some damaging wind. Well, when I was about 10 years old, the eye of that hurricane went right over Hartford, Connecticut. And I'll never forget it. We were home. My parents are divorced, so I was at my mother's house. Right. And it was wild. For the beginning of that day, the winds were howling, the rain sheets sideways, thunderstorms, and everyone was hunkered down in the house.
A whole Wizard of Oz thing without the witch or the spinning house. You had all of it.
Well, you don't know my family that well, but there's probably a witch in there somewhere. But and then all of a sudden it was dead calm. The sun came out. The birds were chirping. Everyone kind of emerged from their houses and kind of assessing the damage around the neighborhood. And there was a tree down in our driveway that took out our fence and kind of clipped our car a little bit. And then 15 minutes later, you could see this black wall coming back. And it was the backside of the hurricane. It was the other side of the eye wall as it was decaying. But and then it went all crazy again with wind and rain. And at that point, I was hooked. And, growing up, I was never great at reading and writing, but I always was darn good at math and science. And in high school, I watched two TV stations. It was basically either on ESPN or the Weather Channel. And those were my, those were my two numbers, basically.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's kind of how I got hooked on it and started watching the Weather Channel. And when I started looking to colleges, I said, you know what? I'm going to go to a school that's big in math and science. I'm not going to a liberal arts school. And chose one that had a major in meteorology and kind of got into it there.
Talk about that. Where'd you go to school? And if somebody is listening, because obviously on WLOB we have ambitious listeners, and they want to go to meteorology school, it must be all science-based because it has to do with climate, it has to do with numbers, but is it a major, is it a special school, that type of thing?
I went to North Carolina State down in Raleigh, North Carolina, and stayed there for a year. I ended up transferring back up north, and it was a culture shock for me. And I think in hindsight, and I was homesick, and in hindsight, I think I would have been homesick no matter where I went. If I went to Central Connecticut State University or UConn, I think I would have just been homesick. It was an adjustment and one that takes time for anyone leaving the house for the first time and heading off to college. But I ended up transferring back up north to a college called State University of New York at Oneonta. It's in the SUNY system. And Oneonta's a small town in between Albany and Binghamton. It's on I-88 in central New York. It's pretty much in the middle of nowhere. But it's a great college town. That and there's another school there called Hartwick, and that's a small liberal arts school. And I played soccer again. I wanted to play soccer again. It wasn't good enough for the ACC, but played up at Oneonta State. And it was a very small program. I only graduated with two other people in my graduating class, two other meteorology majors. Mm-hmm. But it is a major. It's a four-year program. And it's heavily in math and science. I mean, I actually have a minor in mathematics just because of all the math that you take leading up to your core classes in meteorology. But there's a ton of physics, chemistry. You got to clear your bios first as well. Calculus classes, differential equations. It gets complicated.
We were joking before, but the whole Fahrenheit Celsius thing, you obviously have to have that down, right?
Well, you know what? This is kind of a side note.
Yeah.
I don't even bother with the formula anymore. I have a cheat sheet that I break
you?
Out every single day when I'm getting ready to do my forecast, and it's simple, it's quick, and boom, done.
I'm a couple of years older than you, which we've already established.
Only about three, though.
Just a couple. But God, I feel ripped off. I remember so clearly Miss Petrowski. I grew up in a town, Needham. Well,
yeah,
you were a
sure.
meteorologist in Boston, so you probably know all the suburbs. So I went to Needham High, but in Needham,
great town, by the way.
Yeah, Needham's a great suburb, about 20 miles west of Boston. And Miss Petrowski in third grade, I can remember her saying this, is a math teacher. You know, we all have to learn Celsius. This is back in the 70s, and it's like it is a given. The Celsius is it. And the U.S. and only one other country, like Croatia or something, is still non-Celsius-based. And all we've done with Celsius, metric system.
Metric, right.
Is 2-liter bottles of Coke
yeah.
and a couple other things. But the whole Celsius thing was a big, you know, for some reason, Americans are so parochial about our stuff, we didn't want to give up the imperial measurement thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you travel around the world, it seems kind of nutty. The rest of the world all functions metric, so temperature and Celsius and kilometers and all that. And all joking aside, as a meteorologist, you're dealing with numbers and temperatures and records and all that. You know, if all you've done is work in the area in the U.S., I guess it's all relative, but it still must come into play sometimes when you're trying to convert hurricane measurements from mm-hmm. around the world, that type of thing, from Celsius to Fahrenheit, right?
It absolutely does. We're like the jack of all trades when it comes to these different systems. You know, there's a marine system too that works in knots a lot of the time, and you know, converting knots to miles per hour and.
Oh, right.
Celsius is a big one. We rely heavily as meteorologists on models and modeling and the output that they give us. And a lot of that output in the numerical form is in Celsius or in knots. So we do what we understand it a little more than I think than most do. But for some reason, you're right. Americans are just so resistant to the change, and the mainstream really across the globe is what it is. It's mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, and there are serious consequences for that too in terms of global finance and the dollar and all that. And also something that people probably don't think about is medicine, because medicine calculations and dosages, when you start mixing and matching depending on where the drugs are coming from, there's all kinds of studies showing that, you know, it's impacting negatively a lot of people. One of the presidential candidates, that was his campaign a couple months ago, one of the 17, I don't know. Do you know who it is, Sully? Come on, you're supposed to.
I don't know this.
Well, there's
I'm sorry.
A presidential candidate, and he's one of the fringe candidates. He's not in the Republican clown car that people kind of immediately identify with. But his campaign was. And he picked his, you know, everyone could kind of gone with healthcare and climate change and all these mm-hmm. other. He decided to go metric. His whole campaign was he wanted to be, you know, elect me as president, and I will make sure that obviously he didn't go very far with it.
It's so confusing. I tripled anytime my kids have a fever,
right?
You know, and you have to give them the children's Tylenol or the children's Advil. It's in milliliters. Sometimes it's a teaspoon. It's a tablespoon. I triple check, you know, just to be safe that I'm not and be sure that I'm not giving them, you know, overdosing them and causing a problem. But it is. It's super confusing.
Super confusing. We have Todd Guttner here. He is, we you know, let in with Mr. Sunshine Song, but He is a meteorologist with Channel 6 here in Portland. So talk about your first job. So you graduate school. And then, as anyone's familiar with the broadcast industry, you know, in the old days, you'd make up a bunch of tapes, you'd put them in letters, you'd wait by the mailbox. You know, at this during this era, everything's kind of digitized. So you send out a bunch of your work, a bunch of your broadcasts. Where did you start out, and how did you get that first opportunity?
Well, after my undergrad degree, I'm the type of person that puts all my eggs in one basket. So I gave myself one option after undergrad, which was to go to graduate school, naturally, and continue to study meteorology and weather and the atmosphere. And I applied to one graduate school, like I did undergrad. I applied to one undergraduate school.
Wow.
And I, you know, got in, whatever. This was San Jose State University out in California. And made the move. And again, that was another tough transition. But started going to graduate school out there, lasted one semester, instantly knew that continuing the education in the field of weather, which at that point is predominantly research. I actually had a great gig. I was working at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. They did a lot
big
of
big telescope, right?
That, and they did a lot of research with the A-bomb back in the day.
Oh, right.
This was out in Livermore, California. And I was getting a full ride. They were paying for my room and board, et cetera. But it was just so boring to me. I mean, you sit behind a computer for 8 straight hours without windows, basically, and you type code. And it was just wasn't for me. It didn't fit my personality. So I was really discouraged. And like I said, I only lasted a semester, dropped out of that. My mom actually came out. And I'll never forget this. She came out one day right after Christmas. And I was at a loss for what I was going to do. I mean, I was practically in tears. And she said, and I was ready to jump into the finance sector.
And this is Northern California, right?
Yeah, right outside of San Francisco, yep.
So you had In-N-Out Burger. You had decent weather. You could go to Berkeley, hang out.
Right.
All that. And still,
yet I was still miserable.
Wow. Okay.
It got better, though.
Okay.
I ended up, you know, that area of the country is one stunning, stunning location. But I was in tears and had no idea what I was going to do. And before I jumped into taking an entry-level job at Merrill Lynch, because this was late 90s, early 2000, when the market was booming, and this was Silicon Valley, and everybody was making money, et cetera, and the stock market was taking off, she said, you know what, before you toss away your whole undergraduate degree in meteorology, which is a passion of mine, and just tossing it aside, why don't you explore the television part of it? Because in my head, going through meteorology and studying it, I never in a million years envisioned myself on television doing weather. I thought I'd work for the National Weather Service, or I would continue to do research or go to school, you know, and continue to study the field.
But why'd you feel that way? Because this is awkward, and I don't think these words have ever been said in the studio, Todd, but you're a handsome man.
Wow.
And so I'm sure your mom felt
a little
the same way.
Here.
No, back up just a little bit. I'm saying television is obviously a visual medium. Obviously, yeah. It's, you know, we're a society that rewards and puts value and focus in terms of the visual and the aesthetic. That, of course, is why I'm on radio. if you're sharp, you study meteorologist, you were at that time a good-looking kid, now you're a good-looking young guy, why wouldn't you think everyone wants to be on TV? Everyone, you know, watching ESPN wants to go, booyah, you know, the cool side of the pillow. You had to be. You grew up in a TV era, right?
That was a Stu Scott reference.
I know.
Right
that
there,
was a
I
little
think, right?
bit of a in honor of
yes,
Stu Scott.
Yes, posthumously, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for the kind words.
Were you just being humble? Yeah, because here, this is Ty Smart Talk is all about getting right to the true story, Todd Gutner.
So I guess for me, there was this stigma that being on television, delivering a forecast,
with a green screen and a clicker, you didn't feel as though the green screen and the clicker was enough? I'm not trying to minimize meteorology to green screen and clicker.
But that's kind of what I did. For myself, I minimized it. I didn't think it was worthy enough, you know, almost to go through 4 years of studying all these crazy equations and thermodynamics and all these equations of the atmosphere and motion, and then, you know, to go on every day and kind of bring it bring the science of it down to a level where we can all understand and try to tell a story that relates to everyone's life, yet still have this backbone of the atmosphere and the field with it. So I minimized it, and I didn't think it was worthy in my head. In hindsight, I was severely wrong, and I'm forever grateful for my mom for kind of kicking me in the butt and pushing me down that road, the one road that I didn't want to travel upon. And when I was out there, I moved up to San Francisco from San Jose and walked into KGO-TV, which is the ABC station out there in San Francisco, and walked in off the street and asked to speak to the morning meteorologist. Her name was Lee Glasser, a mentor of mine. But early on, it was kind of a rough start there. I asked to speak to her. The receptionist called up, and I could hear her speaking through the phone from, you know, five to 10 feet away, saying, who is this guy? He can't just stop by and ask to speak to me, etc. And she said, you know, Lee's not taking visitors now. I was just looking for an internship. You know, I would have done anything to get my foot in the door. So I sat on their bench in the lobby of KGO-TV on Front Street in San Francisco, wow, right across from, you know, all these tourists and the beautiful wharfs down there, with my head in my hands for about a half an hour. And all of a sudden, this woman comes out of the elevator, and I'd never seen her before. I didn't know who Lee Glasser was. It wasn't like the internet was a big thing back then, and I was new to San Francisco.
And
you could just click on a picture.
Yeah, obviously stalker laws were a little bit loose then back then, too.
Exactly.
And so you were waiting for her in the lobby, and she came out.
Oh, I just had this, something came over me that is Lee Glasser, and I went up and approached her, and she said, you can't just approach people like this. And as soon as I got the word intern out, you know, she, who gets up at 2:30 in the morning, said, oh, wait, maybe I can set my alarm for 3:30 in the morning.
And you do some advanced research. You,
yes,
get the coffee.
Do her graphics for her, right, et cetera. And, you know, she eventually, through a little bit of coercion there, took me on, and I interned there, which turned into a producer role and a producer job at the station for about a year. And that's kind of how I got my foot in the door for TV. And now, with that said, that was all behind the scenes. And I had to work hard. To get experience in front of that green wall. You know, when they were not on TV, I was practicing in front of that green wall for hours at a time. And it wasn't easy. You get yourself a tape together. About a year and a half later, I got a tape together. And like you say, you send it out to television stations across the country. And at that point, I wanted to get back east. I'd been out there for about 2.5 years, and I loved it. I mean, it's a beautiful place to live.
I go out probably 4 times a year.
Isn't it stunning?
Oh, yeah. We have many clients in San Francisco. Okay. I was just there last month. I was out in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. Other than the earthquakes out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
It really is. It really is.
So you moved on after a year. You were at the ABC affiliate. And it was an internship, and then what was the next step after that?
So I got my tapes together and sent them to the East Coast.
I mean,
we
talked about the green screen. I don't think we're breaking any trade secrets here for viewers. By the way, we have Todd Guttner here. He is the meteorologist with Channel 6. Was here for years in 2000 to 2007, went to BZ, and then came back after 7 years down there in Boston, and he's now been here for last year. But when people see the screens, they know it's not real, so it's digitized, and typically there's a green background, which for reasons I don't understand, but the electronic images that you have are more easily superimposed on green than any other color on the spectrum. But you have to know, the thing that I've been in front of a green screen a couple of times, your right and your left, that is the thing, yeah, that would always mess me up.
Sure.
Because you have to stand there looking at the camera, turning with your left hand and not sure if you're putting your hand into Sebago Lake when you're trying to be on Peaks Island, and you don't know if you're reaching up to Bangor or somehow you're grabbing, you know, Presque Isle. How long does that take to get comfortable with the visual, the spatial, of being comfortable going, the green screen's there, I've got faith in the technology in front of me, I can point right to what's happening in Augusta and hit it like the, you now do so often in your role on Channel 6?
Well, I still slip up every once in a while. I mean, you never truly master the green screen, I guess. But like a bike, the more you do it, the better you get at riding it, essentially. Funny story to that, though. When I was in California practicing in front of this green screen over and over and getting my tape together, you know, on the West Coast, you stand on the left side of the screen because you want to stand in the Pacific Ocean so you don't cover up California when you're talking about it.
Wow.
Now, when I came...
I never would have thought of that. Being an East Coast guy, it's going totally to the West Coast...
Yeah, when I came out here,
that is so funny.
When I came to CSH to do my interview,
yeah.
And I had to do an audition in front of the green screen, I was totally thrown off
because
I was supposed to stand in the Atlantic Ocean, and that wasn't the side that I was comfortable with.
That's the funniest.
So that threw me for a loop, but they gave me a sink or swim situation, and they hired me for some reason.
Well, they're getting too bogged down in the green screen. Explain a little bit of the process. If you know whether it's in the morning or the afternoon, or if you're doing something at night and you have a 2-minute, whatever the weather break is, depending on the broadcast period, you know what you have for kind of a slot. So the producers, you know how much production time you have. Do you build the slides or the animation in sequence? And the little clicker in your hand, is it merely just taking it through the sequence, or can you do anything with the clicker, like on the fly? Like if one of the anchors say, well, that's interesting about temperature, Todd, but why don't we go to the pictures of the hurry? I mean, do you have any other control yourself, or can all you do is either advance the order that you have the material in, or can you do anything else with the clicker?
Some clickers are more intricate and advanced than others and do, you know, cooler things. It depends on the weather system that you have, and we're actually in the process of upgrading, so we'll get a more advanced clicker. But right now, it's pretty much just forward and back through your slideshow, and you can toggle between a couple of sources. Like, we can toggle between our radar that we use, that system, and our regular weather graphics system, so we can go back and forth between them. But, you know, when I get in there, I usually get in 2, and in the wintertime, sometimes 3 hours before we actually get on the air, because the majority of my hardworking part of my day is before I actually deliver the forecast and tell the story. The forecasting part takes a while, especially in the winter when we're dealing with some nor'easters. And then you have to put your graphics together, draw, be creative, etc. And then finally, in the end, you're telling a weather story, and you kind of want these graphics to flow together to help you tell that weather story. And they're kind of just the pictures to the story. So, you know, you've got to line them up correctly. And that takes time, too. But, you know, if I know I have 2 minutes to do my weather story and my weather segment for a 30-minute newscast, say at 6 o'clock,
right. Then
I'm going to have X amount of graphics that will fill that amount of time. And I got to tell you, I'm a producer's nightmare, because meteorologists, they have the gift to gab, and we can just milk it and milk it and milk it, and we always kill their time. I mean, they're in my ear, because we wear these earpieces,
right,
where they're connected to us to tell
5 seconds. Get out of the hurricane,
right,
Todd. Drop the hurricane.
Right.
Throw it back to the desk, Todd. And you're like, I'm not throwing it back to the desk. It's really interesting what's happening
exactly.
In the western part of the state. We've got a report from Mount Washington. It is fascinating. And then the anchors are like, Todd, that really is, but we need to get on to the next thing.
Oh, yeah. And then the producers, they just roll their eyes, because they need to hit their commercial breaks, and they need to hit an end time to their show.
Yeah.
So they don't typically like meteorologists too much.
Hey, Sully, have I ever told you my live on air experience?
I'm not sure that you have.
And this may be the good time to jump in with that. By the way, before I get into my little story, we've got Todd Guttner here, who is a meteorologist with WCSH6, the NBC affiliate. He's been here for years. I don't want to be critical of any other meteorologists. I think we have some really good on-air guys here. But Todd, you're my favorite. I've said that. How long have I said that for, Sully? Many years?
Many. Yeah. All the years I've known you.
Yeah, and there have been times where I didn't really care about the Boston forecast, and I got to go on BZ. I got to see what's...
That's really cool.
Yeah, it
Thank
is.
You.
It is. It's
Thanks
not quite as creepy as you stalking the ABC on-air person
right.
in San Francisco, but, you know, mine's genuine. So here's my on-air thing. About, I don't know, 15 years ago, I was down in Atlanta, and I was heavily involved with sports. I was a sports agent. I ran sporting events. And I used to be a guest on this nightly sports show. And it was, it wasn't the Wayne's World, you know, end of the internet, end of the cable thing. It was a highly ranked. It was locked in with an affiliate, had four cameras, production, all that. And so I was a guest for a couple of years. And as a guest, I would kill it. As a guest, it would be like, oh, yeah, we've got Steve Woods here. We're going to talk about baseball. What's going on in baseball? What's going on in the NBA? Because it would literally, in that format as a guest, it would be, for me, the way that I handle it, it would be like somebody tossing you a little softball, and you kind of see it, and you kind of hit it. Well, one day they called up. And
That's your wheelhouse.
That was the wheelhouse.
Right.
It was a sweet spot. And when I was on the show was called Sports Unlimited. That's where we got this little mug idea. They would give all the guests a little sports. I've got 32 Sports Unlimited mugs at home. So that's the first of your Steve-O mug.
Hopefully many more.
So one day the producer called up and said, hey, this guy Stewart is, Matt Stewart, is he's going on a week's vacation next month, and we decided to do five guest hosts. And so we're going to have, like, Kevin Willis, the basketball player, host one night. We're going to have somebody host another night. And we want you to take one of the nights, a half-hour live show. And I was thinking to myself, fantastic. I am going to be great. I get, you know, so we did pre-production. There were, like, you know, four or five blocks. And we go through the block, you know, what we're going to cover, where we come in and out on the commercial breaks. I get, first of all, there wasn't enough time for me to go through makeup. which for me, in my case, I needed makeup and liposuction.
Oh, come on.
And it was, so there wasn't enough time. So finally, it's like I get to the seat, I've got my tie on, I've got the mic, we got the lighting set, I'm in the little earbud, and it's like 5, 4, and then the red light goes on, and I just looked at it. And seriously, I was like flop sweating from the movie Broadcast News. And I was like, and I hear, Steve, you got to say something. Okay, welcome. I'm Steve. I'm on Sports Unlimited. And I had like Dave Justice, who at that time I represented. And
wow.
I was a baseball agent. And I was an NBA agent. So I had stocked the pond with, you know, easy fish.
Sure.
For friends I knew.
Right.
Kevin Willis, who was the center with the Hawks. Kevin, come on in. He goes, hey, Woodzo, what are you doing? I go, tell us about basketball. And it was the biggest train wreck. My wife still has the VHS tape. She still has it. In any time, in any context, I kind of, you know, think I'm too big of a deal. You know, and obviously,
she brings it back to life.
She goes, yeah,
brings
you want
it back to
her. Let's go to the videotape. So that whole thing of being on air is not an easy thing. It is not. It is, I mean, when you do anything long enough, that it's like the 10,000 hour. But it was the worst 30 minutes of my life of on air, and I was so incredibly bad. And at the end, nobody said anything, nobody clapped, nobody joked about it. It was so horrific that everyone just looked down. And I took out the earpiece, and I wanted to high-five the camera guy. I wanted to go into the sound booth, and everyone was just, mm-mm.
It was just living there.
Oh, yeah. And and we live in a world where everything's digitized, so it's not like, you know, in the 50s or 60s, all those, you know, Ed Sullivan tapes are so, you know, decayed that you can't see them.
Right.
This is around there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, let's get back to you, Todd Guttner. By the way, between San Francisco, talk about how you ended up here in Portland the first time. And then after 7 years, what was the situation that allowed you to move into a bigger market, which I think in TV is kind of the goal is to get to bigger markets and do all that. So talk about a little that context.
Well, you know, getting to Portland the first time, I was willing to work anywhere. I mean, I sent probably 20 tapes back to the East Coast from California after I got my tape together in tiny markets like Lynchburg, Virginia and Bristol, Tennessee. Portland happened to be the largest market that I sent it to. And our markets go from one being the largest, New York City, to 180 or 210 or something.
ADIs or DMSs, depending on how the media zone is kind of rated.
Sure, and the people that have the ability to watch television in that market. But Portland was the largest, which is around a 70, and it may be a little higher now at this point. But I think in this business, media, whether it's radio or television, a lot of it has to do with timing or who you know. And the timing was just perfect for me because Channel 6, WCSH, they had an opening for over a year. And, you know, the guys that were there, Kupo, who's been there since around 1980, Mannix was there for 20 plus years, and Roger Griswold, the colleague who's now over at Channel 8, they were working their tails off, and you know they weren't able to take vacations, etc., and they were at wit's end, and they just needed a warm body to fill a weekend morning slot, and that's kind of how it happened. I sent it back east. I called them up. I followed up on the tape. I called them up and they said, "Yeah, you know what? Why don't you we'll fly you out." And you know, I didn't have to stay in a hotel for them. I had a cousin that I'm really close with that lives over in Scarborough now, and stayed with him and his wife. And they gave me a sink or swim situation. It's kind of a funny story because the general manager, Steve Thaxton at the time, from what I'm told, said he's not going to make it. The talent rep who kind of coaches, the talent coach that coaches all of the on-air people, her name is Lynn Gartley, and she worked at Talent Dynamics, said, "Nope, he's not going to make it." And Mike Curry, who was the news director at the time, who is out of the business now, said, "You know what? I think he is going to make it. I'm going to give him a shot." And it took me a while to get my feet underneath me. But, you know, after about a year, you know, I started.
What was the biggest thing when you said make it? What is the biggest thing in the role of a meteorologist? Is it the pre-production work, or do they really just judge the on-air 60 seconds? So when they were saying, "We don't think he's going to make it," drilling down, what was that they didn't think? They didn't think you were going to connect with an audience? They didn't think you could look through the camera and make people feel better about waking up in a zero-degree snowy day? I mean, what was it that wasn't their concern with?
I think it was that. I think it was being comfortable on camera so that you can deliver a story that's credible and easy to follow and get the information that you need so that you can live your life. The science part of it, I had down. For the most part, I mean, you know, I knew the nuts and bolts of the atmosphere and weather.
Barometric pressure going down, bad, going up, something else.
Good.
I couldn't even tell you
good.
What barometric pressure does, other than, you know, barometric pressure is sinking is bad, right?
Absolutely.
Everyone should
know
that.
Low pressure, bad weather.
Sure.
High pressure, happy weather.
But they just didn't see that how you would connect.
Exactly. They didn't see the potential for me down the line to get seasoned in the industry. They weren't too concerned about the weather part of it. But, you know, if you're a deer in headlights on television, that doesn't look so good, and it could potentially, you know, have people turn the channel.
Right.
So I was a risk, and they gave me a shot. And eventually with good coaching from Lynn and some guidance from Mike and Steve and really, Joe Kupo really took me under his wing, and another mentor for me in this industry.
He seems like a nice man. I've never met him.
He's a father figure, really, honestly. And just being in the same room for him for that 7-year stretch, watching and absorbing his knowledge and how he forecasts, because he's been doing this in this town, you know, for 30 plus years. And he's seen it all.
He knows the inverted fog layer.
He knows marine layer. He knows it well.
If we have a thermal influx, he's. You know who's also really great? Bill Green. I got to say, really big.
He's an awesome man.
He's a neighbor. He lives in Cumberland,
yep.
And he's been here a couple of times. But he has been such a great ambassador, not only for the station, but, you know, Bill Green's mane is this iconic thing that he personifies, and he... You know, talking about connecting with the camera, you can't either meet Bill Green in person or watch one of his shows without just feeling He's a nice man. I want him in my living room. I want to hear, you know, he may be doing some story in Katahdin or there's some little fish lodge in Presque Isle, which I don't think I'm ever going to go to, but I want to listen because Bill Green says it's important and there's empathy when Bill Green talks.
He's one of the best storytellers in this business. And he actually, for me, was also very influential. He didn't have the weather background that Joe did that he could teach me, but he taught me how to perform and to deliver better. You know, he came over to me one day, probably 18 months into my, you know, tiny career. And he said, Todd, you got to work on your enunciating and your breathing and your pronouncing, your
just
delivery.
Your dictation, your all of yeah, that. How you kind of project out.
He said, you need to speak and talk from your stomach. And I had no idea what the heck he was talking about. Just project it.
Yeah.
Project it better. And it took me a while to kind of just get what he was trying to say. But it clicked one day. And he came back and he said, you got it, kid. You got it. And to this day, I mean, wow. He's still in that newsroom over there. And he talks to all the newbies that are in that newsroom. You know, there's a lot of 20-year-olds, in their 20s in that newsroom that need coaching and don't necessarily get it that much, but he's right there.
And
you
can't really get it from Syracuse. And I don't mean to knock Syracuse. It just seems like all the air talent now is coming from Syracuse. If you don't go to Syracuse, which is great on the technical stuff.
They live and bleed the orange, right?
I know. That's all you hear about. By the way, we've got Todd Guttner here. He is a meteorologist with Channel 6, WCSH. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. So you get to the station here in 2007. Everything's going great. And at that point, were you married yet? Were you?
Yes. Yeah, my wife and I got married in 2003. 2003.
Rachel,
yep.
So you get married. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, in 2007, did one of those broadcast headhunters call you up or send you a little email at Gmail or something saying, hey, we don't want to really poach the other affiliate, but we think you're ready to come down to Boston? Or did Rachel say, hey, listen, I love being here in Maine because Maine is beautiful, but wouldn't it be great if we just lived in Boston? What was the catalyst from going from Portland in 2007 down to Boston?
It was a lucky phone call. It really was. The news director at the time down at WBZ in Boston was good friends with some of the media up here in the industry. And she vacationed up here all the time over on Peaks Island.
Was Jack Williams still there?
I grew up with Jack Williams. He just retired last year.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
he should be in the Smithsonian. I grew up as a young kid, and it was, what a great voice. Jack Williams.
Sounds like Anchorman. I mean,
yeah.
he could easily have been Will Ferrell.
Oh, wow. And what hair. Oh. Even Bell, geez, he had such beauty. Yeah. I don't know if he used mousse or some sort of special hair care product. All seriousness, he was a great on-air talent.
He's an awesome band,
so all
too.
Of a sudden, you get the call. Mm-hmm. And because they're both NBC affiliates, was it kind of an interleague swap at all?
Well, actually, it was years prior to that. I don't know how many, but BZ and I believe it was WHDH, they actually flopped affiliations.
Oh.
BZ was the NBC affiliate. They went to CBS, and HDH was the CBS, and they went to NBC.
Yeah.
And that was a few years ago. But no, this was jumping ship. I mean, Channel 6 is owned by a large company that owns, you know, 20-plus television stations across the country, and WBZ is owned by CBS out of New York City. It's an owned and operated operation. So this was just a lucky phone call. And, you know, this was back when we still had answering machines. And I remember coming home and click and
that's
play.
That's funny.
This is Jen Street, news director from WBZ. And, you know, I kind of want to have a conversation with you. And I almost fainted. My wife and I were incredibly content here in Portland. My wife's a teacher. She was teaching in Falmouth in the elementary school, and she loved it. And she's a great teacher. She's awesome at what she does. And we were incredibly content. We have lifelong friends, and we didn't want to just go somewhere to climb the ladder.
Right.
You know, that wasn't my style. I like to grow roots. I'm very loyal, and I wasn't just going to get up and go to Greensboro, North Carolina, or Dayton, Ohio, just because it was a little bit of a larger market.
A 50 market.
There you go,
or,
you know, right. That wasn't my style.
Because once you start on that treadmill, the business, the industry, as we say in the business, can really, you can be chasing, you know, kind of the hamster wheel for a long time. And mm-hmm. But Boston felt like it was close enough. There was proximity. You're from Hartford. Mm-hmm. You're a Red Sox fan.
Yep.
So at least it had the right sports alignment for you.
It was more of a dream come true type thing where, you know.
Are they still on Storrow Drive?
They are. Yes, they're still in that building right across from the Charles River.
I grew up on the Charles River in Needham, Mass.
Yes.
So you went down there. What was that experience like? You know, bigger market, bigger microscope, bigger, how many million people now? 3 million?
Three million
in the kind of the metro area. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you go from Portland into a bigger thing. What was that like, both in terms of the work and being in a bigger media market as a, media personality, Mr. Weather?
It was twofold, very demanding, but also very rewarding too. I think up here those 7 years in Portland, I cut my teeth up here and got seasoned as a deliverer and telling the story. But down there, I feel like I refined a lot of the presentation and kind of took a step back a couple of years in and kind of made a conscious decision on how I present. I think that sometimes we as on-air meteorologists or weather people delivering it can be a little too technical. And I really like to or try to relate to a lifestyle, relate how today's weather is going to affect you and your lifestyle, whether that is instead of saying, there's going to be some high clouds up there. And you say, you know what? There are going to be some high clouds up there. And you're also going to probably notice some contrails coming out of planes. Something that when, someone's walking around on Congress Street in Portland or, down on Commercial having lunch, and they look up and they say, oh, yeah, you know what? How about that? Little things, sure. Little tidbits. So that
and being in a bigger market, I don't know about the technology and how that affected your field, but you're certainly around, as you go to a bigger market, more experienced people, more advances in technology. Is the game faster? I mean, if this was a sports analogy, if you're in Boston, which is a top 10 market, more pressure, more people, or when the when you stand in front of the green screen, is it similar to be in Portland, just different detail?
I mean, the nuts and bolts are similar, but the outcome is in the end much more pressure to perform, deliver, and the difference between a Portland newsroom and a Boston newsroom is it's night and day. For one, in the weather office, we had a producer, someone that would actually make your graphics for you. And that took a lot of getting used to because I was used to making my own graphics. I mean, I didn't want anyone touching my stuff. I didn't want anyone kind of forming my story and directing me down a certain path telling that story. So that took a while to get used to. But in the end, I did learn a lot from that because I learned a lot of great tips on making graphics and how they will help me. And now they help me with my weather story up here. But also down there, there are a lot of bigwigs down there. There are a lot of managers down there. Up in a Portland newsroom, there are a couple. And, in a Boston newsroom, there are several. And they all are trying to get an angle and in times making things bigger than they really need to be. And I think as an industry, the television, delivering your television weather, sometimes, we can get called out on, you're crying wolf. You're making a big deal about nothing. It's just 6 inches. Well, in Boston, they do that. They'll be on the air for hours and hours at a time for a six to eight inch snowstorm. Here in Maine, people are real. It's just... We're not on the air for 7 straight hours to cover a 10-inch snowstorm. It snows in Maine. It's going to happen. It snows in New England. It's going to happen. We're going to get through it. Now, of course, some of these large storms, these nor'easters, we had a blizzard last year that, dumped 25 inches of snow in Portland. Right. Those are serious matters. And there are a handful of times every year when it becomes more of you know, fun and jovial and delivering weather to, okay, this could threaten lives and property. And that's where, you know, you need to make that adjustment and get serious and still deliver the information that people need in a way that they can understand it and not just putting some bullet points on a map and saying, okay, you know, winds 60 to 70 miles per hour. Well, what does that mean? How is that going to bring down a tree? Is that going to take shingles off my house? Is that going to knock my power out? You got to take it a step further.
Yeah.
So that's where I learned down in Boston.
So in the next couple of minutes we have before we have to finish up and go to part two, I would love to have you come back because I'm interested in weather. I'm interested in the environment we live in. I'm interested in, you know, having a detailed discussion on climate change and what the real impact would mean. But what was the catalyst for you coming back to Portland last year? And talk a little bit about your experience being reunited in the market where you started and what that means for you and your family.
It's been really special. I mean, it really has. You know, we had our kids. My wife and I have twins. They're turning six at the end of September, entering first grade. And in the end, this was a lifestyle decision and one that would better the life of my family. And what better place to do it than in Maine? I mean, the people of Maine are so solid and real and caring too. Not that I grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in Southern New England. Not that they aren't down there either, but it's a little faster paced and I think they miss a little bit. You know, they may overlook things a little bit. And I think here in Maine, you know, there's like one degree of separation in Maine. Everybody knows everybody.
Right.
And it's kind of special. It's like one large family. So, now, over the last several years, you know, off and on, I've had conversations with Channel 6, but nothing really lined up perfectly. And last year, it started to, and it did. You know, my kids were about to enter kindergarten, and it just seemed like it was the right thing to do for raising my children in a beautiful environment, in an outdoor environment where, you know, you embrace all seasons or you get swallowed up by one, namely winter.
Right.
And it's just been so enjoyable and the people have been so welcoming. And that newsroom, you know, the core of it is still there. Joe Cupo, Bill Green, Pat Callahan, Rob Caldwell, Cindy Williams, Lee Nelson, Sharon Oates. I could go on and on. And those faces are their family. I mean, they helped me grow up in this business and I'm just happy to pay it forward now. And
you know, Pat Callahan yelled at me once.
For real?
Yeah, it felt at the day. It was I ran for U.S. Senate 3 years ago. And it was during a debate that he was hosting. And there was this guy, Angus King. And
oh,
I've
heard
all
of him.
No, I have a lot of respect for now U.S. Senator King. But, you know, I was speaking on an issue I was talking about something in, I don't know if it was Senator King or Charlie Summers, but Pat was like, "It's not your turn, Mr. Woods." And I'm like, I know, but this may be my only opportunity, Pat. So excuse me.
I've got to do it.
Can
I'm
I have
sorry.
Camera two back over to Mr. Woods, please? No, it's a great organization. Finally, as we have to wrap up, you've been a meteorologist. You have a degree. You stalked the person in San Francisco, which was a great story. Any interest on your part? You know, while you were down in Boston, you did some other assignments, gardening with Guttner, which I need to get some tips from. But any interest in would it be considered either evolution or change to do something different on air, being anchor? Like now that you've done it. Any interest in at some point being an anchor, or is it something that you want to stay in the lane of meteorologist because you enjoy the field, you enjoy the content? And any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, variety is the spice of life, you know. That was one of the things that hooked me instantly when I did finally, you know, stick my toe in the TV weather part of this field. Was that every day was different. The forecast is always changing. And not only that, but you get to do new and different and interesting things, like going into the public. I mean, I visit as many schools as I can. I try to. especially the elementary schools, because those the little guys, they ask the darndest questions, and it's adorable. And, and I find it that they get something out of it, and it's rewarding for me. Or go to a community event or help out with some sort of fundraiser. Or just seeing a new weather pattern and it changing and evolving. So I'm a type of person that kind of needed that change and that variety during the course of a day, instead of sitting behind a cubicle behind a computer for 12 hours or 8 hours or whatever it was. I do enjoy gardening, and I did enjoy doing those gardening segments. And, you know, I love the culinary. When I was in San Francisco, honestly, this is one of my favorite jobs of my life, was waiting on tables. I will never forget it. You learn so much. You establish people skills, and right. It really helped me in my career to get going, really.
Connecting with people.
Absolutely. And you learn a ton. And I'll tell you this. I made a heck of a lot of money waiting on tables in San Francisco than I ever did, you know, here in Portland. It was really funny. But I think the neat thing about Channel 6 and Portland is that because we don't have a huge newsroom and all these different players and pieces to do all these other things like a gardening segment or, you know, go do a story on Christmas trees or the winter moth or something like that, I get to do them every once in a while because we don't have that staff. So that's they let you do that too. And it keeps you fresh and it keeps you interested. So those things absolutely do interest me. But in the end, weather has always been a hobby of mine, and I can't ever see myself giving it up. I mean, you can't ever say never.
Right.
But I don't have any plans to do that.
I should know this, but which broadcast now? I know that it mixes up between morning, afternoon, and night. And so for people wanting to find you, where are you on the schedule now?
I'm on mornings with Lee Nelson and Sharon Rose Vasness. And it's an early shift. I mean, we go on at 4:30 a.m. And my alarm clock goes off at 2:15 every morning, Monday through Friday. And it's a tough shift, a grueling shift. But you know what? There are a lot of pluses to it because, you know, I get out late morning. I get a couple hours to myself, and then I pick my kids up at the bus stop, and I get to see my kids grow up, and I get to go to their ball games, and I get to go to the recitals and things like that. And it's I actually enjoy the shift more than the night side shift, which personally would be better for myself because I would go to bed when it's dark and wake up when it's light, like the rest of the world does.
Right.
But I would never see my children and my family. And that was one of the reasons why we came up here. That was high on our list because it would better my family's life and our lives. And it's a great quality of life. And, you know, it says it on the sign when you cross that Piscataqua River Bridge down in Kittery. It's the way life should be. And it absolutely is.
Todd, I'd love for you to come back sometime. This is really the hour has really flown by.
Absolutely. This was a blast.
We haven't even gotten to like half of my questions here.
Remember, I have the gift of gab.
Well,
I'm a meteorologist.
I know. You're a professional. But we've had Todd Guttner here. Hope you come back sometime.
I'd love to. Absolutely.
His information you can find at the station website, which is WCSH6.com, also on Twitter. He's very active in social digital media. So if you go to on Twitter at Todd, WCSH, you'll find his information. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O and News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. We'll be back next week. Thank you.